Hello and welcome to LGM Explains, the what, the why and the how of commodities. I'm Harry and today I'm talking to our head of pooled index strategy, Michael Stewart. Michael, thank you for joining me today.
No, thanks very much for having me. I'm very excited to be here, actually.
Let's jump right into it with the what. When we talk about broad commodities, what specific components make that up?
Yeah, and this is a question that seems quite basic, right? Like, what are broad commodities? But actually, this is an important part to define before we get into all the other interesting aspects of this topic. So when we say broad commodities, what do we mean? Fundamentally, we mean those critical raw inputs into our everyday lives, into our global economy, effectively. We generally split them up into kind of two broad groups. Hard commodities, these are commodities that are ultimately taken from the ground, things like energy resources, so your crude oil, your natural gas, the fundamental energy resources that our economy today needs to move forward. And ultimately, the other side would be more the metals. So industrial metals, things like aluminum or copper, but also precious metals, things like gold and silver, fundamental inputs, as I say, into our daily lives. Those are the hard commodities. On the soft side, we have some commodities as well. We have the agricultural commodities. So these are things like corn, soybeans, things that are grown and consumed by humans, by animals alike. And we also have the other side of the soft equation, which is actually the livestock commodities. And out of the four groups, I would say definitely this is the one where we get a few questions. People ask, you actually consider livestock, part of broad commodities? And we do. There are two key contracts, two key commodities that investors actually do look at. The first is live cattle. All right, understood. And the second, probably a bit more cryptic, is actually lean hogs. So my question for you, Harry, is what is a lean hog, do you think? Do you have any idea?
Well, I don't have a farming background. I'm going to guess a lean hog is a piglet.
Not quite, but I can see how you would get there. All commodities ultimately are standardized. And we'll get to this point again, a bit later in the podcast around kind of how these things are actually traded. But we can define all the commodities, including lean hogs. And a lean hog is actually a pig that weighs 275 pounds. So still pretty big. It might sound like lean means small, but actually that's a sizable pig. And together, as I say, together, this makes up the kind of family of broad commodities that investors broadly look at when we discuss the asset class. So just to summarize again, you have your energy commodities, your metals, both your agriculture and your livestock.
Okay, so although it was an asset class, commodities might be a bit unfamiliar to many, really. Actually, the component parts are familiar things that we use in our day-to-day lives. Yeah. We put in our car, we consume.
Absolutely.
Given that these are physical things, I'm guessing that filling your spare room with them isn't a practical way of accessing them. So how can investors actually add them to their portfolios?
Yeah, great question. And I guess you could try. You could try to have a room full of live cattle if you wanted, but you're right. The reality is it's impractical to think about gaining access to this asset class in a physical way, outside of a few examples, right? And I think, gold and silver, precious metals, ultimately these are commodities where the size relative to their value is such that you can store these commodities in a vault. You can look at a kind of investment products that are out there in the market that are linked to the physical price of these commodities. But beyond that, things get a bit cumbersome. There's a nice anecdote, a nice story that we like to tell around the famous economist John Maynard Keynes, who during his time at Cambridge was fond of speculating on commodity prices. And one of his speculations, we should say, went a bit awry, and he was forced to negotiate with the dean of the school to actually store a large amount of wheat in the school chapel. Now, in the 11th hour, he actually sold on that wheat to another buyer, so he didn't have to use the chapel as kind of a makeshift logistics hub. But ultimately, that's the risk, right? If you do start to speculate on the physical commodity itself, you can be stuck in these situations. So the reality is, no, we don't look at the physical commodity. We look at futures contracts. And futures contracts are standardized. As I mentioned with lean hogs, there's a definition around each commodity, which enables much more transparent, much more liquid allocations, much more liquid trading for investors to gain access to the price of these commodities without the impracticalities of the physical commodity. So that's typically how we do it.
Okay. I guess that brings us on to the next of the big questions on the podcast today, which is, what do commodities bring to investors? If you have a diversified portfolio comprising equities, bonds, things people are familiar with, why would you want to add commodities?
Yeah, and I think there are three key reasons. And this is a question, again, that we get all the time. The first and probably the most prevalent is inflation protection. The second would be diversification versus those asset classes you mentioned. And finally, we'd be thinking a little bit about the return potential over time. Of course, investors are kind of interested in that aspect as well. So inflation is key. Inflation is really the headline story in many cases. In many ways, you know, commodities are the best hedge for inflation in a multi-asset portfolio. And even when I say that, that logic is actually a bit circular, because in many cases, it's the commodity prices that drive inflation. And so you have this real kind of positive feedback loop between inflation and commodities. But we can look back to 2022 as a year where assets across multi-asset portfolios came under pressure. Equities, fixed income, everything was coming under pressure on the back of rising rates. It was commodities in that context that actually performed. So inflation protection is a key one, but of course there are others as well. As I mentioned, diversification, return potential.
So when you mention inflation hedging, I think a lot of listeners will be thinking of gold, because that's kind of the classic asset that you hold to hedge your inflation risk. Is it possible to look back over time and compare the performance of gold in periods of high inflation versus broad commodities?
Yeah, absolutely, we can. And this question we get quite often, because gold, as you say, is a very well-known commodity. It's a long-standing store of value. It's been around for thousands of years in that role. But when we look at just the facts and say which basket of commodities, the broad commodities or the gold, which actually does a better job here at hedging inflation, we see that I think over the last 10 years, broad commodities have been more correlated to inflation over 95% of the time versus gold. So when it comes to pure inflation protection, there really almost is no comparison between broad commodities and gold. But just to caveat that, we're not saying that gold doesn't have a role in a portfolio. Of course, we think it actually does. Gold behaves quite differently. It's almost more of an inflation, a portfolio hedge, a bit of an insurance policy on kind of overall volatility, whereas broad commodities is that much more direct exposure to inflation. So that's, I think, the difference between the two.
Okay, and going back to something you touched on just a second ago, which is diversification. I think you mentioned 2022, which is a bit of a year to forget for almost all investors. Is that a good example of the diversification role that commodities can play for investors?
Yeah, I think it is. I think it absolutely is. But I think you have to take almost a step back to think of, why do commodities play this role for us in a portfolio? Why do they behave so differently? I think one term we often use is that commodities are the true third asset class alongside equities and fixed income. So why do they play this role? And as I mentioned at the start, you know, commodities are fundamentally the price of a physical good, a certain grade or quantity of that good at a time and place. And so you can think about all the factors that can go into influence that price. Thinking about WTI crude, one of the most well-known, well-followed commodities out there. WTI is famously the price of a barrel of crude oil, not anywhere, but actually in Cushing, Oklahoma. I'm not sure if you can find Cushing, Oklahoma on a map.
I hope you're not going to ask me to point out a map.
I'm not, but it's very central, I'll tell you that. It's very central and very well connected by a large number of pipelines. And this is why it became this kind of benchmark price for WTI crude. So you can imagine that there are actually a number of factors that could influence the price of crude. Of course, supply and demand, economic growth, these kind of more macro themes. But supply shocks can play a big role in commodity prices. Things like a burst pipeline or issues actually extracting commodities from the ground in this case can play a big role. We don't have to go that far to think about things like the Suez Canal challenges that we've seen and how this can actually play a role in commodity prices and ultimately inflation. So commodities do have a fundamental set of different drivers that drive returns versus equities and fixed income. And when you then combine your commodities together, so it's not just talking about WTI, it's this broad set of commodities, you can see how even within the basket, there can be different drivers, different seasonality trends, and overall it can create an asset class that just behaves fundamentally quite differently.
Okay, so we've talked now about inflation protection, diversification. I think the third kind of reason that investors might look to commodities is for their return potential. Yeah. I wonder if you can break that down into the different drivers, potential drivers of returns within the asset class.
Yeah, and this is the part where we get, frankly, the most questions. But it's also, I think, the most important to understand for investors is, where do returns come from in a broad commodity strategy? And there are three aspects of returns as well. So there's the price of the commodities. That's the most obvious and maybe the most straightforward, but we'll touch on that. And then there are two other aspects that are also really important. The second is the roll yield. And this is not a term I've used yet, so I'll get into a little bit what that actually means. And finally, you have another yield to talk about, which is the collateral yield. And it's these three components together that will actually generate the total return experience for investors. So just to take them one by one, prices is, again, very straightforward. So although we are investing in futures contracts and not in the physical commodities themselves, of course, we are exposed to the price of these commodities. So over time, if you have changes in supply and demand, if you have supply shocks, you have different currencies in the global economy, we will see the price react, and investors will therefore be able to participate in that price movement by owning a basket of broad commodity futures. So price return is a pretty straightforward one, but of course, it's a key driver. The second is the roll yield. Now, I've talked a little bit about the futures that are used to access the commodity prices. And the goal here is not to get into the details of futures investing. But ultimately, one key factor of futures investing is that a futures contract does expire. I mentioned that a futures contract is the price of a commodity, a given quantity and grade, at a place in time. And ultimately, time is the key factor there, because these futures contracts will expire. And so as investors, we want to maintain a consistent and long-term exposure. We need to move, or the term we use is roll, from an expiring contract to the next available contract or the next contract that we would choose as part of our strategy. Now, this process of buying one contract and moving to the next is called rolling. And depending on the way that prices actually react in the future, this can have a negative or a positive impact on overall returns. I think this is one that investors, when they first hear about commodity investing, they do focus on this a lot, as they should, because roll yield can be very important. And if we look at commodity strategies that don't consider the shape or the kind of characteristics of prices in the future, it can be a negative drag on returns in many cases. So this is a key one that we want to kind of keep in mind and potentially look at strategies that consider this action in the design of them themselves. And that can be a key thing, a key way to differentiate from just traditional broad commodity strategies. So I've talked about price. Roll yield is moving from one contract to the next, and what does that mean from a return perspective? But the final one, the one that, again, often gets forgotten, is the collateral yield. Now, we're talking about futures contracts. These are derivatives contracts. These are somewhat ethereal, but ultimately, these are contracts that can be put on in quite an efficient way from an investment management perspective. So when an investor buys a product, when they actually put money into a product that gives exposure to broad commodities, all that cash isn't needed to put the futures contracts on and get that exposure to those prices. So what does the cash do? Where does the cash go? Well, ultimately, investors should expect to return and get a return on that cash, to earn a yield, and that's the collateral yield. So it's the cash yield component as part of the overall strategy. When we were talking about commodities in recent years, and when rates were near zero, this kind of got forgotten, and many investors didn't really look at this aspect because it wasn't meaningful. But today, it is meaningful. And so we want to remind investors that broad commodities, if you're looking at a structured product, they should be generating a collateral yield. In many cases, the reference there is the three-month U.S. T-bill. Today, that yields over 5%. So this is definitely not something to be forgotten. This is a key driver of returns for broad commodities kind of over the foreseeable future. So that's those three components together that drive returns. And I know that sounds a lot, sounds a bit more complex than perhaps, say, an equity strategy where it's really kind of the price with maybe a bit of dividends, or if it's fixed income, talking about the yield. But I think it's important that investors do look at those three aspects, consider all three, especially when considering to allocate or not to broad commodities, and also what their expectations can be from returns over time.
I think it's really helpful to break it down into those three different parts. But like you say, I think compared to equities or fixed income, where you have the price movement plus the yield in the case of fixed income, it's a bit more to consider.
It is, but I think it's worth it, right? It is definitely worth considering all three aspects, especially things like the collateral yield, which has been forgotten, but in many cases makes commodities in this context really a cash plus type investment, which can be quite attractive as a diversifier in a portfolio. It can bring a different set of source of returns, which I think is always important.
Great. So just to return really quickly to something you touched on a minute ago, which was the roll yield. And I think you mentioned that historically, for many of the well-established, better-known broad commodity indices, the roll yield has basically been a drag on returns because of this process of investing in the next available month's contract. Yeah. I wonder if you can talk a bit to what strategies can be deployed to counteract that effect.
Yeah, absolutely. I think we can talk about the strategies, but again, maybe it's worth just highlighting a little bit, you know, where this rural yield comes from. And maybe an example or a story might be the best way to kind of consider that. If I think about gold, because everyone can picture, you know, a bar of gold in their minds, and they know that gold is very durable, it will last for a very long time. And if I think about this area and say to you, if I had a bar of gold and wanted to sell it to you today or in a year's time, would you expect to pay more today or in a year? And I think the answer would be in
shall
a
I
year.
Guess? Shall I guess?
I think it, you should.
Okay,
it should
so, be in guess, a year. So in a year's time, I've got to do something with that gold. I've got to store it somewhere. So
absolutely
that
could
cost me something, right?
Absolutely right. The difference between delivering gold today and delivering gold in a year's time is what happens to that gold in the interim, right? Of course, you're going to want to put that in a vault. You might want a security guard to look after your vault if you have large amounts of gold in there. These things incur costs. At some point, you know, these costs have to be built in to the overall price. And so you can expect gold to be more expensive in the future than it is today, just based on futures pricing. This means that if you are rolling contracts, you are moving from a lower price to a higher price. And over time, this is a negative experience for investors. So it's really more to do with the nature of commodities that kind of impact the structure of the commodity prices than it is with really future expectations from investors. And that's really the key. So when we know that often commodities have this characteristic where future prices can be higher than current prices, what can we do to mitigate that? There are some simple things we can do. There are some simple enhancements that we've seen to broad commodity strategies that can be quite effective, simply buying contracts further out on the futures curve. So instead of always buying 1 month forward or 2 months forward, going out maybe 3, 4, or 5 months on the curve can actually reduce the impact of some of that kind of negative cost, that negative roll yield that can be experienced. That's a very static but very simple and frankly powerful enhancement. On the other side, you can think about maybe a more dynamic, more, you know, second or third generation concept where you're actually considering for each commodity, what is the future prices curve telling us? How can we maximize the positive impact of that role and minimize the negative impact of that role? And that can be done in quite a systematic way. Ultimately, what is the goal here? Well, the goal is to improve overall total return, right? It's to maintain the characteristics of the asset class, which, as we mentioned, is inflation, diversification, return potential, but to do so in a way that it's a bit more efficient and maybe doesn't incur some of those costs that can be quite prevalent in traditional strategies.
Well, thanks so much, Michael, for breaking commodity investing down into manageable chunks. I really learned a lot from that today. And thank you, everyone, for tuning in.
Thanks very much, Harry. Pleasure.